This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Subscribe to AstroCast.
Joined by Justin Verlander.
Lance McCullers.
Michael Brantley.
Tons of interviews.
Alex Bregman.
Carlos Correa.
Follow your favorite team.
We definitely love playing in front of our fans at Minute Maid.
For the H. AstroCast is poured for you by Carbach Brewing.
Welcome back. Robert Ford joined by Astros General Manager James Click before the Astros wrap up this three-game series with the Angels, looking for the sweep. And a big reason for the win yesterday, James, was Jake Meyers. Two home runs, including a grand slam, his first two big league home runs, and five runs batted in, almost had a third home run, just missed one by a few feet in an earlier at bat. But, you know, finally getting a chance to play, and it looks like he's going to be able to play here for a little bit and really get a chance to see what Jake Meyers can do at the big league level.
Yeah, that's the silver lining of the whole situation, is getting a little bit more regular playing time for Jake. And, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago that felt like he had done everything that he needed to do to earn an opportunity to show if he could do this at the big league level. And certainly fantastic to see last night. It was really exciting. Just the first one obviously was big, and then the second one just opening the game up. That was really, really big for us. So hopefully he can keep it up.
Hopefully he can. And Kyle Tucker going on the injury list yesterday, health and safety protocols. Any update on Tucker? Any idea as to when we might see him again?
No, unfortunately, with these situations, it's a result of or we have to wait on, you know, clearance from doctors and testing and that kind of stuff. And so as soon as we have more information, we'll be able to get it out there. But, our anticipation is that this will be a few days at minimum. I think Dusty talked about it before the game as well. So we'll keep a close eye on it. He's fine, but we need to make sure that we're safe and keeping everybody safe.
So that there were three guys added to the Astros taxi squad today, with Abreu and Brandon Belak and Robel Garcia. Was that kind of keeping in mind that, I mean, obviously you hope that there's not an outbreak or anything like that, but I wanted to have some guys on the taxi squad just in case some more guys had to miss time with health and safety protocol?
Yeah, we felt it was prudent, especially with the team being on the road, and especially with day games. If something happens overnight, it can be difficult to get guys there in time. And Major League Baseball kept the taxi squad this year for these kind of circumstances, and we felt it was prudent to add them to it. Don't really love the idea of disrupting their season and their ability to get the at-bats and the plate appearances and the pitches and the innings and things like that at AAA, but obviously the big leagues is the priority. And right now we felt better having them with us. You know, hopefully we don't need them, but this is a situation where we felt like it was the right thing to do for the team.
How do you feel about just kind of your outfield coverage at the big league level? I mean, I know that was a position of maybe a little bit of concern, certainly at the beginning of the year. And now with Tucker missing some time, I mean, obviously having Alvarez being able to play left field like he is today, really helps. But how do you feel about in terms of making sure you have enough coverage there so guys can get days off, things like that?
Well, we had a lot of unknowns coming into the season, and Alvarez being able to play was an unknown. And his work that he's put in to go out there and be, you know, not just a competent outfielder, but I would say a pretty good one, really adds a lot to the roster and makes a lot of those decisions easier. The other uncertainty was some of the players that hadn't really had a shot at the major league level and hadn't really been able to establish with us up at the big leagues that this is something they could do every day. And having a couple of them step up and show that, it has really solidified the outfield depth on the roster. And even with Tucker being out, I feel like we have four or five guys that we can put out there and feel pretty good about things.
Alex Bregman has been out since mid-June with the quad injury. And I know he also had a little bit of a setback with the hamstring tightness at one point on his minor league rehab. Minor league rehab had stopped, looked like he was going to resume it this weekend, didn't play in the games for Sugar Land yesterday or on Friday? What's the latest with Alex Bregman?
We determined that the best course of action was to do a lot of work that didn't involve playing in games. And, you know, Alex is not going to be outworked by anybody. And he's working as hard as he possibly can to get back. But we need to make sure that these things, especially when you're talking about legs and the big muscles in the legs, it has to be 100% behind you, because you're worried about changing mechanics. You're worrying about compensation, other parts of the leg or the body, trying to compensate for something that may be at full strength, but you mentally just still have a check in the back of your head where you're like, I don't want to push it. And so right now we are just making sure that he is good to go at full speed with his legs completely underneath him. Once we feel like that has been accomplished, then we'll move on to making sure that the hitting is all there. This all obviously is very fluid. I wish we were able to put a very firm time frame on it, but especially with these major muscle groups that we're talking about here, unfortunately, a lot of it is just let's test today, let's test tomorrow, let's test the next day, and just kind of see how everything responds. And we won't know really what the time frame is until we get the response from his body to various stresses that we put it under over the next few days.
So not certain at this point when he's going to play in another minor league rehab game?
No, exactly. And you know, look, we're all as frustrated. Obviously, Alex is frustrated with that. But this is, in our determination with the doctors, the right course of action. We need to make sure with a lot of this off-field testing, you know, non-in-game testing, that this is completely behind him. And that way we can get into a regular schedule on the games. I don't want to lose sight of the fact also that he didn't really have an opportunity to have a lot of very consistent playing time in the games when he was out there. We had rainouts, we had off days, we had, you know, the hamstring tightened up on him. And so we're trying to get him to a point where we are very confident that he can play in a series of games in a row. And that will give us the confidence that we need to get him back in there. And he's like, he's taken the long view on this thing too. You know, we're hoping that this season is going to go into October for us. And that's what we're focused on. We don't want to rush him back by any means. Again, it's something we wish we could put a timetable on and say exactly when he's going to come back, but we need to just see how his body responds to various stressors.
With Bregman, how much of this has to do also with his past history of having some leg injuries and some soft tissue injuries, and maybe trying to, not just this specific injury, but just trying to try and put that all further into his rearview mirror?
Well, anytime you're treating injuries, you're treating the whole health history of a player. And so, yes, it impacts it. But ideally, we can get to a point where we get these things fully healed, get them fully behind us, and then we don't have to think about them ever again. That's the goal. That's what we're trying to get to. Just having him mentally in a spot where he can focus on hitting and being an all-star and, you know, MVP caliber third baseman. And that's what we're getting to. And you can't do that if you're constantly wondering if your muscles are going to seize up on you. And so getting that behind us, getting everything 100% is the focus right now.
Joined by Astros general manager James Blake before the Astros wrap up their three-game set in Anaheim. Got some good news on Jose Urquidy dealing with a shoulder issue through live BP yesterday. What are the next steps for Jose Urquidy? And you have an idea of when, you know, if all goes well, you might see him back in the rotation.
Yeah, he threw two innings and 35 pitches yesterday to hitters. He looked very, very good from the video and the reports that we've seen. And so it's at this point just making sure that he reports in today without any symptoms in the shoulder or anywhere else, just reports with what we like to call normal soreness after pitching. And then it's just a buildup from that point, you know, two innings, three innings, four innings, and start to decide when do we want to get him back in the rotation and kind of what does that look like. So he's making good progress. And obviously yesterday's game was a pretty tremendous step forward.
So the hope is the next step is a minor league rehab game for him?
Potentially. We're going to decide, you know, is it best for him to stay at West Palm Beach and face hitters at that point, or do we want to get him out to an actual game? So we'll determine that in conversations with our trainers and with him.
Rafael Montero went on the injury list Tuesday with a shoulder injury. Of course, one of the relievers that you acquired at the trade deadline. Any update on his status? When we can see
him? No, not yet. We're waiting to get a second opinion to just look at everything and make sure that we didn't miss anything. So once we get that second opinion, then we'll have a prognosis and a plan going forward.
This year, you know, we're getting close to September, you know, a couple of weeks away. In years past, it's been about, hey, September call-ups, you could bring up anybody who's on your 40-man roster, or add someone to your 40-man roster, but it's different now. It goes from 26-man roster to just a 28-man roster in September. So Is that kind of, and also too, this year, the minor league season's going till the end of September. Normally it goes until Labor Day weekend. Does that kind of change the conversation and the way you think about September call-ups? And I mean, is the concept like completely different now?
The idea of a September call-up, I don't know that we really have that anymore. It's basically just, if you remember last year, we started out with a 30-man roster and then 28 and then, you know, 26. And so this is a situation where we're just going to kind of treat it as a couple extra roster spots. And guys can still be optioned down to the minors because the minors are still going on. We'll have a couple of extra guys on the bench. And, you know, one of the nice things, though, is that we're not going to run into a situation where you have maybe 36 guys in the locker room and you're struggling trying to find playing time for everybody. I mean, that's one of the downsides of September call-ups is sometimes you get guys up there and they play once a week. And that's not good for anybody's development. And so having the playing time down there in AAA, where they can keep going, I think is going to be really valuable for development this year.
Do you think there's value in, and I know teams would do this in the past, you talk about the difficulty getting guys playing time, but I know in the past sometimes teams would call up maybe somebody, a top prospect who maybe he's not going to play, but wanted him to be around the big leaguers. Or, you know, I think about, you know, the Dodgers, they called up Will Smith, had him with the team in September one year because he's a catcher and they just wanted him to get familiar with how the big league catchers prepare. Do you think there's value in doing things like that, even if a guy isn't playing or maybe even not on the active roster in September?
Yeah, no question. There absolutely is. But that's also the reason that we like to have a lot of those guys in spring training so that they can get around the big league guys then and see how they prepare, see how they work, understand the level of talent that they will be up against when they get to the big leagues. And it's amazing. You know, I've heard stories of players who were 10-year veterans in the big leagues and they end up being coaches in AAA. And then they come up to the big leagues and they talk about how they forgot, you know, what the strike zone is really like at the major league level or how fast the game really is at the big league level. And so anytime that you can get those guys, we're striving to get to the big leagues, exposure to the quality of play that we see up here, whether it be in spring training or whether it be in September, there is definitely value there. But at the same time, you know, there is a negative of coming up and just sitting on the bench and watching games from up close and the opportunity cost of not being able to go out there and continue to play. And so the decision is always the balance of those two things.
Jeremy Pena is someone we may have seen this year, but left wrist surgery back in late April, hasn't played in a minor league game this year. Is there any possibility he could get into games this year? And I mean, obviously, as we mentioned, minor league season goes until the end of September, so that might help in that regard.
Yeah, no question. The fact that the season is going now until the end of September, I think makes it a very, very real possibility that Jeremy could get back out there. He's been down in West Palm Beach and he's been getting his work in, even though he hasn't been able to necessarily do a lot of the baseball activities. He's been doing a tremendous job just physically getting himself ready to play, getting stronger, getting more athletic. He is starting to get into games and swing the bats a little bit down there, and we've gotten some good initial reports. So once he gets that thing completely behind him, hopefully we can get him out to Sugar Land and see a little bit of him out there. I think it would be really valuable for him to have some games at the end of the season, because a lot of guys who miss a big chunk of the season talk about wanting to have that so that they feel like they're going to have a normal off season. So that they feel like, okay, I got back, I got in the games. Now I can just do my normal off season routine. And we're really hoping that he's in that boat.
I guess, you know, there's the Arizona Fall League this year, winter ball as well. Those possibilities for Pena.
Yeah. And he had tremendous success in winter ball last year. And it's certainly something that we're very open to. I think getting those game reps and trying to claw back at some of the missed time that he had this year, especially at a position like shortstop, where there's so many little things that happen in games that you can't really simulate, is critical. But he obviously was very successful down there last year, and hopefully we can get him, like I said, that playing time to claw back at some of the lost season.
All right, James Click, Astros General Manager, thanks for joining us, and hopefully you get to watch a sweep today.
Hopefully, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll be back with more of Astro Launch right after this.
The 2021 season is upon us, and the Houston Astros single-game tickets are on sale now. Make your plans to see the Astros live at Minute Maid Park.
Get your hat now.
From Dollar Dogs and Friday Night Fireworks to great plays and Crawford Box home runs.
Looking up, see you later!
You won't want to miss a second of the excitement at Minute Maid Park this season. We can't wait to welcome you back to the ballpark, because this season is for the age. Visit astros.com/tickets for more information and to get your tickets today.
The shape of things to come in our national sport as the baseball season gets underway.
The spanking new Astrodome is the new $31 million home of the Houston Astros, a dome stadium that holds nearly 50,000 for a baseball game and more for conventions and meetings.
People said, no, you can't play baseball inside. You can't play sports inside. And they said, yeah, we can.
It was mind-boggling just to look up there and says, finally, this is the place to play. This is the Astrodome. This is the eighth one of the world.
It's a home run.
This is the first stadium that has ever reached the topping out point 30 days ahead of schedule. In every other case, they've been behind. Congratulations to all who make this day possible. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
Welcome back. Pleased to be joined by Din Man. He is the grandson of Judge Roy Hoffhines, who has been inducted into the Astros Hall of Fame. And Judge Hoffhines is just such a dynamic figure and has left such a big impact on the Houston community. I guess starting with kind of your earliest memories of your grandfather and of his time owning the Astros and being around the Astros.
I was maybe the luckiest grandkid on the face of the earth in many ways. My birthday is a March 27th birthday, so my great memories are having birthdays at Astros spring training, going into the cafeteria where they're playing ping pong and doing all these amazing things. Guys like Larry Milbourne, guys who, you know, not necessarily the star players mm-hmm. at all times, and Larry would be shouting, "Somebody's in trouble," and he'd come in and play table tennis with some of the Astros players, and it was just like this larger than life amazing situation, you know, and you had when you have a grandfather who has access, not only access, but phenomenal behind the scenes amusement in the Astrodome. You know, I was there and running around, running over to the press box, getting the game notes, and I was just talking to my mom about how I would do play-by-play, sitting in one of these little pop-out windows uh-huh. that he had done, where he had a circus room, and he had a shooting gallery room, and he had a little barbershop room, and a little miniature golf course and bowling alley, and it was amazing. But I remember the most is the people he had around him that were just fascinating and fun to be around. I mean, whether it was me as just a little child with the other partners he had who helped make all of this happen. I mean, Bob Smith helped make it all happen, and Mr. Cullinan and Mr. Kirksey and Mr. Richards and my mom was involved. And so it was a family thing, and it was a blast to be a part of. And I was really awestruck. He was really my hero, and he lived until my junior year in high school. First time I really had a hard, horrible cry in my life was I'm a high school baseball player in Austin, Texas, and I get the phone call that my grandfather, who created the Astrodome and brought the Astros to Houston, had passed away. And it was terrible. I'd been a driver for 2 years, so every chance I got to drive down to Houston from Austin to go to baseball games, I pretty much lived here when they had homestands.
And you know, as a kid, because I wonder this sometimes, kids who grow up with parents or grandparents who are so well known beyond just being your parent or grandparent, when did you really start to have an appreciation for the fact that, hey, I don't have the same experience that most kids have because of who my grandfather is?
You know, it's interesting. You know, my grandfather was, he had a stroke, and it put him in a wheelchair. And we would still go to like Capan's restaurant and these other places around town, and everybody would point. You know, they're pointing at your granddad. And it kind of strikes you that, okay, they're pointing kind of deferentially in a way that's respectful. And so I always felt honored about it. And whether it was going to Astroworld and people recognizing who he was, and the chance we had to just go on rides and just be among the other kids, and I had all these terrific friends, and some of them might have been my terrific friends because they knew that they could go to baseball games more often, but it didn't feel that way. You know, it never felt like I was this bratty grandkid who somehow was somebody they needed to glob onto because of what we had. And that's great. I really credit him with that, because somehow he kept us pretty humble, where we're still eating Jack-in-the-Box tacos and, you know, acting like all the other kids and having fun and being on the field with the players' kids. So we really just felt like that. But yeah, he was a larger-than-life figure, and he did so many great things in this town and for this team, for this franchise, that it always felt pretty special. But, you know, you don't just have one set of grandparents. So I had other grandparents and, you know, who worked in a refinery and had blue-collar jobs and had a ranch in South Texas. So I really had a really great mixture of grandparents, and that kept it all pretty even keel too.
So when you see the Astrodome now, which was your grandfather's vision, and he helped make it happen, you know, the first indoor stadium, and then obviously led to AstroTurf, which he was instrumental in developing as well. When you see the Astrodome now, what do you hope happens moving forward? I mean, it has to be somewhat disappointing to just kind of see it sitting there and really nothing happening with it.
You know, there's some things finally happening behind the scenes mm-hmm. that are really encouraging. People with significant credibility who have ideas that are practical and yet also inspired. And so I'm really appreciative of that, and also emboldened by the fact that it's not something that's going to involve digging into people's pockets and doing anything that's like a pie in the sky mm-hmm. type of approach. But there's some things that need to be happening in this town that can be productive. There's some things that are happening in places like Atlanta, and you see when you go to these other ballpark villages in Colorado and that sort of thing. And you know, with the baseball team not being there, you don't have as many home dates, and you can relate to that. But you've done enough basketball and other sports in your life. You see in this town there's room for doing some things to accommodate the rodeo, to create another venue, perhaps sort of integrate it into what the Dome currently looks like, mm-hmm. but have the space to still do some other exciting things that generate revenue, whether it's parking, whether it's spillover, whether it's you see an LA Live and you see a Philadelphia Philly Live and you see these things that go on. Houston is a world-class city that needs to not only keep up with the Joneses, but pass them. And so we've got some things that I know that are in the works. And I'm truly excited about the family getting behind it, being supportive of it, and kind of being, frankly, a person who can be helpful as much as I can with all the different constituents that are involved. I mean, I went out to Alpine, Texas with my mom and with a group of folks who were just terrific, and they just cared so much about the Dome and the conservancy and the history and getting that antiquities landmark and that sort of thing. Those are all just pieces of the puzzle, and I feel like there's a serendipitous magic to the fact that I have the opportunity to go in and do the best I can to help bridge the right approach to making that happen and rallying the support. But I do know behind the scenes it's happening, and I believe that the county is seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, and so is the city. And so fortuitously, I had a really dear friend, Jimmy Lee Solomon, who worked at MLB and started the Urban Youth Academies, and may he rest in peace. He passed away last fall and was involved in a business that I'm working on. And Jimmy Lee was really tight with Mayor Turner. So I got to have a relationship with Mayor Turner and have a discussion there. So some things have come full circle for me in my life, and I'm at that great intersection where I hope that I can add that value and help to do something that really recognizes the melting pot of effort that was required to get the Astrodome built in the first place.
All right, Den Mann, grandson of Judge Roy Hofhines, one of the new inductees into the Astros Hall of Fame and original owner of the Houston Astros. Thank you so much for joining us, Den. Always good to see you.
Thank you. You too. Keep up the great work. Tell Sparky hello. I'm really glad to see he's in that booth with you, and you guys are the best.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more of Astrolaunch right after this.
Robert Ford, Steve Sparks, the Houston Astros on your radio all summer long.
Okay, welcome back to Astrolaunch. This is Steve Sparks ahead of the second game with the Los Angeles Angels. The Astros won a big game last night, and Omar Lopez, the third base coach for the Astros, is my guest today. Omar, first of all, a big swing by Kyle Tucker yesterday. You've known him for a long time. Is he exceeding your expectations, or is he right about where you thought he'd be at this point?
Well, a lot of people – let me go back. Thank you, Sparky, for the opportunity.
Sure.
Let me go back. I mean, back in the days when he was in high A, even in low A and in Quad Cities, everybody was talking about his weird swing that he had.
Yeah.
That he had, and he still has it. So, but I remember these exactly words by our hitting coach back in those days, that swing have a lot of room for errors. Okay? So he let those hands so back in the behind his body that he has a great quick whip,
yeah,
that he's gonna be able to do damage on mistakes, even though if he collapsed a little bit with his front side. So I think that's what makes Kyle special at the plate. Now, one of the things that he was trying to deal with his swing was pitches like open in, and surprised me like in the last few years that he's been making those adjustments.
Yeah.
Probably not chasing, and sometimes fouling it off. You know, being able to fight at the plate and then away for the mistakes.
when you get a player like that, he's in high school and he has a weird looking swing, like you said, do they tell you at the very beginning, don't touch him, let him do his thing for a little while first?
And that's what they did to him. They didn't touch him at all.
Yeah.
At all. They just they recognized that swing at some point is going to apply. And he's going to be able to execute it. And also the baseball IQ that this kid had since he was a child, I believe so. Because to be able to be selected in the first round out of high school is because you have something. Yeah. And it took some time to Cal to prove consistency in the minors, to be able to see if he can compete in the big leagues. And he's doing it. And I think he's more to come. It's more to come because he's gonna grow up. He's gonna be more mature, mm-hmm. and I think Cal, if he, you know, God keeping healthy, I'm hoping he stay healthy for the rest of his career. He's gonna be special.
I've got a question for you. You may have to think about it for just a minute, but as a minor league head coach, a manager, you had to write a million reports. You had to write reports on your team, on the other teams that you were playing against for 12 years in the minor leagues with the Astros. So Omar, I want to ask you, who did you miss most on? When you were writing reports, you said, like, this guy can't make it, whether it's on the Astros or another organization. Because I had a lot of teammates that I missed on that I didn't think that were going to be even in the major leagues that ended up having good careers.
Now, on top of my head, Sparky, I don't have any names.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, like, when you spend days and years with the same players, it's hard to miss. It's hard to miss the progression, the development year by year, getting to know the guys from the mental standpoint, physical standpoint, his strong mental toughness. It's hard to miss. It's hard to miss. But your predictions, it could be fail when you spend, like for example, a couple years ago, I had Jake Meyers for only 1 month. And on top of my head is like, okay, this guy was swinging and miss a lot.
Okay.
A lot. Like almost a strikeout every night, twice and three times. And then towards the end of the season, or basically after the season, I said, okay, it's hard for me to predict Jake Meyers when I only was able to see him only one month. It's at the end of the season that he already have 400 at-bats. He don't know what to expect about like what is full season, even though that he played the year before a full season, but never in Texas League. Mm. Because it's easy. In my 2 years in Texas, every guy that shows up in Texas League, it dropped down his average, like 30, 40 points, easy, quick. Why? Better pitching execution, more velo, travel, tough travel.
That's right.
Eating differently, and that compared to High A, which was Carolina League, Carolina League is Disney World. In terms of travel, eating, level-wise. Texas League is different. So it's hard to me for predict. So Jake Meyers, for me, it was like, I don't know. I don't think so in 1 month. If somebody asked me about that right there, I don't know if Jake Meyers is going to be in the big leagues now. Is he going to be able to succeed? We have to see now.
Okay, so I've got a question about specifically with Jake Meyers. He struggled in the 1 month you saw him. How did he handle it?
Really good. Really good, actually.
Actually,
really good. Actually, when he got called up, I said, hey, be yourself. Do not change anything because you have the right personality to be in the big leagues. Mm. Like acting as a first year rookie, whatever. He always the same guy. Always the same guy. You don't see, it's hard to see Jake Meyers pissed.
Yeah.
But you know when he's a little bit upset, not mad, not frustrated, because he understands the game. Like, he needs to go out there and do, for me, in that month, what he was able to do best mm-hmm. was his defense. People ask me, they say, is that good in the outfield? I say, guys, I'm going to tell you this, and you guys will be crazy, but he's better than a straw.
Wow.
And he's better. He's kind of equal or a little bit better defensively, catching the ball routes, go after the balls.
Wow.
Arm-wise, a straw have a better arm strength. But this kid is not like have a below average arm strength. He's more quiet, okay? And probably you see him like he's a little shy, but not. When he gets up there and ball has been hit, he's going to turn around and he's going to get to the spot of the ball that he's supposed to at.
That's what you want?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to ask you about Luis Garcia. Last thing, this is Omar Lopez, the third base coach for the Astros. Luis Garcia, He's got 8 wins as a major leaguer this year. He's a horse. I know you guys are trying to keep his innings down a little bit, but what can you tell me about Luis Garcia when you saw him in the minor leagues?
Well, Sparky, I wasn't able to see Luis Garcia in the minors because my last year in 2019, he was supposed to come and finish in Double A with me. And Bill Murphy, Graham Johnson, that was my pitching coach. And that time, when we talked to Murph, that was our pitching coordinator, they said, Omar, we don't have any spot right now to send up to Luis Garcia, but this guy's legit. And I said, okay, if he is legit, why he's not here? We have a lot of good hitters in this league that he needs to see if he can, we have to see if he's able to compete against these Double A players here.
Right.
And Bill Murphy told me he don't need that. He's going to be in the big league soon. I said, all right. So pandemic shows up, expand the roster in pandemic. And basically, that's what we got. We have to force this young kid to make his major league debut. And when I talk to Luis Garcia, this is my perception because he's from an area in Venezuela. There is a lot of proactive people.
Okay.
Proactive, very like hyper people.
Huh.
You know, like they get up in the morning, they're fishing. It's by the coast.
Okay.
And people, a lot of parties, a lot of action.
Yeah.
And this guy's very shy, calm. When I spoke with them, it was like speaking with a puppy. You know, like you're talking with a puppy, like a little kid, you know, like a shy kid. Like
unassuming.
Unassuming, well-educated.
Yeah.
It's like, what is this? And then when I saw him, this kid on the mound, he looks like a lion.
Yeah.
Like a big lion, like a horse out there that he's going to get into a race.
Get after.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, where did this kid coming from?
That's funny.
And that's when I start to get to know this guy and super. Yeah. I mean, I like his personality. He conducted himself super well.
Yeah.
The entire team loved this kid. You don't hear anything bad against Luis Garcia. Everything is good. And he's getting better and better and better and better because he dedicated a lot. And he's coming from a poor town too as well too. Mm-hmm. But the education from his family is really good. And he also have a brother pitching in Kansas City Royals too organization.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And they also almost have the similar build and delivery as well too.
Wow.
But this guy throws harder. The other one not.
Yeah.
I think Luis is going to have a long career in this game.
Very good. That's Omar Lopez, third base coach for the Astros. Always, thanks for catching up and good luck tonight.
No, thank you, Parky.
2-2. And that is a line drive over the head of Jones and Jess Fair down the right field line headed for the corner. McMahon is on his way to second base. He's around second and trying for three. Altuve's relay to third on a hop. The slide out! Perfect strike from Altuve after getting the ball from Tucker in the corner. Two away.
Everything just perfect. Tucker with the throw, then Altuve with a long hop to the third baseman, and Diaz deking the sliding runner at third base with the late tag. That was beautiful.
Yeah, Diaz stood there like there wasn't going to be a play. Next thing you know, the tag was slapped on him.
Gray delivers. Swing and a drive to center field. That's going to be a base hit. They're going to send Diaz, and he's going to make it. The ball's cut off right in the middle of the diamond. It's 1-0 Astros. Chaz McCormick's 2-for-2 and a big RBI. It's 1-0.
Here comes the 0-1.
Driven to right field, slicing away from the right fielder Blackman. It's down. It's a base hit. Correa's going to score. They're going to send McCormick. He's racing home, and he'll score. Blackman throws the ball away. Back into the infield, it slipped out of his hand. But Taylor Jones, a triple, scoring 2 for the Astros with 2 outs. A shot to right field from Taylor Jones.
The 1-1 to Joe, and that's hit hard up the middle. Altuve diving with the backhand from his knees, throws the first to get him. Altuve into the outfield grass, throwing from his knees from behind second after the diving stop on Connor Joe. Inning over.
0-1.
And Brantley drives it to right center. Blackman on his horse, still going back. And that is off the base of the wall in front of the Astros bullpen. Around third, Altuve, he'll score. It's an RBI double for Brantley and a 4-0 Astros lead.
1-2.
And Altuve pokes this down the left field line. That's going to get down for a base hit. Racing around third is Jones. Here comes a throw by Joe to the plate, and it hits Jones as he slides in leg first. It's an RBI single for Altuve, and a 5-0 Astros lead.
3-2.
Swing and a miss. Stayed with the changeup, and Hilliard down on strikes. One out.
Is that five changeups in a row?
I think that's right.
And that last one was the best. A beauty right on the outside corner.
1-2. Bouncing ball left side to his left. Diaz, he has it to second for one. Altuve on the first. That's a double play, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros blank the Colorado Rockies, winning tonight by a final of 5-0. Jake Odorizzi, 5 scoreless, combining with 4 relievers on the 5-hit shutout. And pleased to be joined now in the Astros dugout by Chaz McCormick. Got the scoring started for the Astros with his RBI single in the fourth. Came in to score as well. Also had a double in the second inning. Chaz, you've been swinging the bat really well on this homestand. Was that 9 hits now in your last 22 at bats? Feeling pretty good at the plate right now?
Yeah, seeing the ball pretty well. Just, you know, trusting my preparation every day. Felt good today. Felt good the past couple days. You know, just making sure I'm on time, quick to the ball, and good things happen.
Chaz, John Gray started at the ball game. He was punching out a lot of guys with his slider. Yeah. You sat on that slider first pitch and hit it off the wall in center field. Were you sitting on that slider?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I made sure to, you know, be on time because, you know, you're always your first at bat. You know, even when you're on time, you seem a little late. So I just made sure to have a quick swing and be on time. And, you know, he threw me a slider low, but it was a good pitch for me to handle. I just stayed through it and hit it well. I wish it went out.
You know, you've been doing a good job all year, Chaz, getting spot duty the beginning part of the year. But how much easier is it to try and maintain that rhythm now that you're playing pretty much every day?
Yeah, it's a lot easier. You know, it's nice to be playing every day, and it's nice to know that even if you have a bad day one day, then you can, you know, you're right back out there the next day.
Chaz, last thing for me. Who are you talking to, the veteran hitters? Who's helping you along?
Michael Brantley, Diaz. I mean, Diaz has been a really good help for me, especially in the beginning, because he was, he kind of did the same thing coming off the bench, yep, getting clutch ABs. Diaz has helped me a lot, and, I can't thank them enough for, kind of helping me through this.
All right, Chaz McCormick, thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the good game and on the win.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Omar Lopez, third base coach for the Astros, flashes the signs. Here comes the 0-1. Driven to right field, slicing away from the right fielder Blackman. It's down. It's a base hit. Correa's going to score. They're going to send McCormick. He's racing home, and he'll score. Blackman throws the ball away back into the infield. It slipped out of his hand. But Taylor Jones scoring 2 for the Astros with 2 outs. A shot to right field from Taylor Jones. They're going to give Taylor Jones a double and an error on Blackman for him to get to third. A big 2-out rally for the Astros here in the fourth.
Set at the belt by Stevenson. His first pitch to Jones. And that's a line drive over the head of McMahon and Jess Fair and rolls into the corner. Jones chucking for second base, and he has himself his second two-bagger of the night. Hit a double to right, and now a double to left.
Went out there to use those long arms to hook it down the line. He was ready right from the get-go.
Taylor, you feel like you've turned the corner offensively?
Yeah, I think I just made some adjustments, and now I'm kind of starting to see that payoff a little bit, trying to get into a little bit of a rhythm, and obviously that's a big thing with hitting is being able to put some consistent at-bats together, and so it's kind of nice to see that.
Hey, Taylor, how have you sort of felt offensively since you've been up here, and I guess just in AAA this year? How have you felt approach-wise and swing-wise all year?
This last option that I had, I started to tinker with mechanics a little bit with the swing. And so when I went down, I was able to kind of put that to use and start to get in a little bit of a rhythm down there, just to be ready so that when I did get another opportunity, I could kind of hit the ground running a little bit. And so I've started to feel like I could put some better at-bats together. I'm making better moves to the ball, and now I think it's starting to pay off a little bit.
You look more relaxed at the plate now. Is that something that you focused on when you went back down for a second, and then now you get an opportunity to play now?
Yeah, I mean, when you make adjustments that you can feel confident about, it gives you confidence at the plate, and I think I just kind of feel that now. I knew that there were some things that were off early on in the season, but you got to kind of battle through that and just play with what you got. With some of the limited at-bats that I had, you know, the confidence wasn't quite there. So I definitely kind of brought that with me when I got, you know, when I was down in AAA and kind of tinkered with some of the stuff. And, so now I do feel like I can be a little bit more confident with the swing and when I'm at the plate now.
It's a 2-2 count to Crone. Stanek looks in for the sign. A long look, an open stance, stands straight up and down. Here's the 2-2 pitch from Ryan Stanek. And he got him, strike three on the split finger, and a fist bump from Stanek, and he strands a runner on second base. We'll go to the seventh inning stretch. The Astros lead 3-1.
Presley works on the first base side of the rubber. The high set, hands away from the body at the letters. The 1-2. Swing and a miss. Got him on the curveball, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros sweep the two-game set from the Rockies. And in their six-game homestand on a winning note, winning this afternoon by a final of 5-1. And Jake Myers joins us, got his first big league start today and contributed with a base hit and a run scored in the sixth inning. And Jake, you helped manufacture that run. You stole your first big league base and then got to third on the deep fly out by Jones. And then, man, what a great slide to be safe at home. Did you know right away that you were safe even though you were called out?
I thought I got in there. I felt the tag and I felt like my hand got in there. And so I kind of was looking at the dugout hoping they were going to review it, and they did. They reviewed it right away, and I was really happy that they overturned that.
And Jake, not only that, you're a wizard down the foul line in right field, jumping into the netting to snag a big out for the Astros. What did that fan tell you when you smacked against him?
I'm not really sure. It all happened kind of fast.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure kind of what happened, but I was working on a similar, just getting some reads before the game, and kind of had a similar play before the game, and so I felt like I had already done it before it kind of happened. So it was a lot of fun to do it in the game.
Hey, Dusty told us before the game that he didn't tell you until today that you were going to get your first big league start. Did you have an inkling today might be the day?
A little bit, but I mean, I feel like, you know, every day you just need to come ready to play. And I'm happy it was today. It was a really fun day, and I'm glad we got the win.
All right, Jake Myers, thanks for joining us, and here's to many more big league starts for you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
This season, Chick-fil-A is on a mission to fight hunger in the greater Houston area. Every time the Astros load the bases at Minute Maid Park, Houston area Chick-fil-A restaurants and the Astros Foundation have teamed up to pledge 1,000 meals each to feed hungry Houstonians. Let's cheer on the Astros as we fight hunger in Houston.
This is Steve Sparks ahead of the three games with the Los Angeles Angels. And Blummer, seems like we're saying just about the same thing every time. Jeff Blum is our guest today. Sorry about that, Jeff.
Good to be on with you, Steve Sparks. It's always a pleasure. I know you're a little confused probably because you're actually in a hotel room and I am not.
You know, you talk about the Angels and we're always saying they feel like they're pitching is always going to keep them short of the playoffs, and it looks like it's going to be the case again this year. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, the Angels have always been that team, whether it be they've made some moves to get that rotation going and then they hit the injury bug, or they have guys in there that just underachieve. I know that the way that their ball club is structured to be highly offensive, and usually when they're at full strength, they can score a lot of runs, but they have had all kinds of issues keeping the opposing offense down. And I think, you know, the greatest example of that is how they've played the Astros in the past, where they've kind of gotten to the Astros pitching, but they've been some high scoring games, but the Astros always end up winning out because they just score more runs.
Do you think that the way the Astros play within the division since basically 5 or 6 years ago, take last year out, but do you think that's more of a psychological advantage that they have now within the division?
Yeah, because I think, a couple of years ago when they were constructing this team, I would imagine the idea probably was how do we win our division? I think that's how most teams look at it too. They say, how do we win our division? Who's our toughest competition and how do we put together a team to beat that toughest competition? And obviously Jeff Luhnow and James Click is now continuing, but they did a good job of putting a team to compete in the West. And now that they've won it, I think that they have created kind of that culture of intimidation as far as, oh man, here come the Astros again. They're gonna beat up on us, whether it be at Minute Maid Park or on the road. And I think sometimes even that road prowess, knowing that they're coming into a ballpark where the Angels play pretty well, it still carries a little bit of weight as far as intimidation. And you got to play your A game to beat the Astros.
You know what I love about this team now is it feels like they're six-inning games. And we've talked about this.
Oh, man, I'm with you.
But Ryan Stanek, Kendall Graven, and Ryan Pressly locking things down if you have the lead through six innings looks pretty sure, doesn't it?
It looks really sure, and I would imagine, and you could probably speak better to this, you know, how does that affect the starting rotation? Because earlier in the season, you know, Dusty's old school, maybe pushing these guys a little bit further than maybe, you know, they thought they were able to go. So they were being forced to go six and seven innings to try and protect that bullpen. Now it feels like it's the other way around since the trade deadline, because you do have those three quality guys to shut a game out in the seventh, eighth, and ninth. So it may alter, you know, how the starting pitchers go out there and allow them to be a little bit more maybe comfortable or under control, or in, you know, maybe less panic when they go out there thinking they have to be perfect.
Talking with Jeff Blum. Jeff, when you look at the Astros offense, just in a blanket statement, what type of pitchers would give them the most fits?
Oh, man, guys that are able to locate minimum of three pitches. I think if you are it would be a mix of fastball, obviously, to be able to, and especially two-seam fastball. If you've got a two-seam fastball that can run in on right-handed hitters, I think that can cause some consternation for right-handed hitters for the Astros, because it opens up that outside corner. And the second pitch would have to be that slider that covers the other side of the plate. And then once you get a left-handed pitcher up there, you've got to have a pretty good changeup or a split. We've seen the Astros in the past kind of struggle with those guys that are able to throw those pitches for strikes early and then go to the strikeout pitch late. So for me, it'd be a three-pitch pitcher that was able to have the get-me-over type stuff early in the count, and then maybe that put-away stuff later in the count.
Yuli Gurriel comes off the IL today. And in the long run, that 10 days may be the best thing that happened to this Astros offense all year long, right?
Yeah, you and I get 2 or 3 days off during a broadcast season, and we feel pretty good coming back. So I can only imagine how good it's going to feel for Yuli. And you're right, during the, you know, these dog days of summer for guys, and, you know, it's no secret that he's a little bit older at 37 years old, but, you know, time off the legs and even unplugging the mind at that age, even as good as he is in that veteran mentality, even just unplugging the mind is going to make him better. We saw it with Michael Brantley. It did him wonders. He came back refreshed. But at this given moment, I think it's going to do wonders for Yuli coming back and being fresh and refreshed to finish off the season.
Last thing, Jeff, the Astros push back Alex Bregman a little bit with his rehab. He restarts that again with Sugarland just to make sure everything's right. Is that how you take this right now?
Yeah, legs are tough. You know, I don't know if you ever had any leg injuries, but for a position player that's playing every single day in a sport that is, you know, reliant on your lower half, not just on defense, but on offense. And it's also a sport that can be sedentary at times, and then you have to have explosive, fast-twitch type bursts. Exactly. And that's where I think the issue might be, you know, whether it be tentativeness just because it's in your head or because it's actual a physical ailment. So I think it's better to make sure that he's right. And how about the fact that you have the luxury of Aledmys Diaz to be able to tell Alex, hey, we're not going to force you back. We're going to give you a little more time and get back when you're ready.
Prediction, 7-game road trip, 3 with the Angels, 4 with the Kansas City Royals. How many do you think the Astros come back home with?
You're taking 2 out of 3 from the Angels just because they play so well on the road in their division. I expect Altuve and Correa to have a really good series in L.A. just because they've had history against those guys. And then the one, you know, I'm leaning towards 3 out of 4, but I think a split in Kansas City would be good just because I don't know what it is about that organization or the guys that they get to play. They're athletic and they grind, you know, they don't give up because they've got nothing to lose. So, it should be a good time out there in Kauffman Stadium. I'm hoping for 3 out of 4 there, but I'll take 2 out of 4 from Kansas City.
Very good, man. Thanks for the time. Great catching up.
Anytime. Enjoy the road trip.
The 1-2. Swing and a miss. Went after an off-speed pitch downstairs. An awkward-looking swing by Adele and a big strikeout for Greinke. The 3-2 to Marsh. Swing and a miss. Got him on an elevated fastball, and the inning is over. So Stassi, a leadoff double, got to third with one out, and then Greinke strikes out Adele and Marsh to get out of it. 1-2. Swing and a miss. Marsh goes down on the curveball, and that is out number two. Fourth strikeout for Greinke. Swing and a miss. Mayfield goes down on a high fastball, and Greinke has his fifth strikeout. Nine in a row, retired by Zach. One away. One out, no one on for Shohei Ohtani. He's lined out and flied out tonight. 2-2. Swing and a miss. Got him on a changeup away. Back-to-back strikeouts for Greinke.
Seven shutout innings for Zach Greinke. He was brilliant. Just two hits in that one, man. It was a walk in the park. No walks. Seven strikeouts.
Greinke retiring the last 14 in a row.
What was working so well for you tonight, and what was your game plan of attack out there?
I think all the pitches were working pretty good. Location was pretty good. And so they hit some balls well. And had some guys playing in that spot, so that made it nice. And so it was less stress that way.
Zach, you've obviously had some really good games this year. Where do you think this one stacks up in terms of the season so far?
You know what? I haven't thought about that in a while. I don't really know how to remember the games off the top of my head, but I'm guessing there is some better than this.
Was there a thought in your mind where you were like, maybe this can be another complete game?
Nah, never crossed my mind today. It was just didn't see it happening. I was happy to get seven, that's for sure. I was thinking more likely six. So nine never crossed my mind.
How's your body holding up? As you know, we get into August now. I think Dusty mentioned something about, you know, you were complaining about some arm issues a couple of starts ago or earlier, but just overall, how are you feeling physically at this point in the season?
Feel great now. I mean, we get off days all the time, and we only throw like 80 pitches now, so it's a lot easier to stay in good shape throughout the season now than it used to be.
Zach, what about the way y'all were able to limit Ohtani and you kept him in the ballpark?
You know, I mean, his at-bats have gotten better every time I face him. This year, the second time we face him was the first time I thought all his at-bats were really locked in. And today, same thing. He did what he was supposed to do, kind of for the most part, with what I threw to him. And hit a ball to warning track. Maybe at our park, it might have been a homer.
It seemed like after the first time through the lineup, you were able to get through much easier. Was there something that you changed or something that you saw that contributed to that?
You know, I would agree. Like that first time through the order, even the outs, they hit the ball decent and some line drives I were at guys, so that helped. But, yeah, the second and third time, I don't know if I pitched much better, but, yeah, it was a lot smoother. I don't really know why.
Zach, good evening. Congratulations on your win tonight. By the way, the 219 of your career, what does it mean to you to tie Hall of Fame Pedro Martinez for the 80 position of all time?
Pedro Martinez, I think you said. That's nice. He was Greg Maddux, Clemens, those guys were the best. I guess there's a couple more, Randy Johnson off the top of my head. But those guys were the guys when I was in middle school, high school, and probably a little before that.
Bases are jacked, nobody out, in a scoreless ball game. Three infielders on the right. Outfielders are deep and shaded the other way. Tucker with massive power.
385 hitter with the bases loaded in his career. 5-for-12 this year.
Holds the bat really high above his helmet. Here's the first pitch. Breaking ball. Crank to right field. What you expect, Kyle Tucker? A grand slam and it's 4-0. First pitch breaking ball and Tucker goes yard for his 22nd home run of the season.
First career grand slam for Kyle Tucker. Obviously came up there sitting, breaking ball, and got it.
Boy, was he ever. Not even a flinch, right on time for the slow breaking ball. It was a curve, outer third of the plate, and Tucker with those long arms cranks it into the right field bleachers.
Kyle, you'd only seen, I believe, one pitch in your first at bat, and then you hit a grand slam on your first pitch of your second. What did you see that made you go for it? And did you get the sense as soon as you made contact that it was going to be out of there?
Yeah. First IB, I got down. I threw a curveball. Felt like it like kind of backed up, like ended up like around the inner line. So it just got me there. And I just saw a slider next AB, left it over the plate, and I just put a good swing on it.
Yeah, they lowered the walls here this year in right field, so I'm guessing when you hit that one, you probably knew it had a pretty good shot.
Yeah, I hit it pretty well, and you know, saw the angle of it, so I felt pretty good about that one. And yeah, I'm kind of glad they lowered the wall just in case on some of them.
Kyle, what do you think about getting that first slam of your career?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I actually didn't know that until later. But yeah, it was pretty cool. Anything you do, like for the first time with the team that we have is special. Just like sharing moments like that with these group of guys is great.
I think the last time you guys scored 4 runs in an inning was Altuve slam in San Francisco. Just with the way the offense is going right now, the bases loaded there, you know, feeling a little more pressure to try to get some of those runs in because you haven't been putting up a lot of crooked numbers.
I mean, as long as we're winning games, you know, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, we had bases loaded, no outs. So I knew, like, even if I hit it relatively, like, deep to the outfield, you know, Carlos was going to score. I mean, bases loaded, no outs. You have good chance of scoring at least one. So, you know, I was glad we ended up putting up 4 and, you know, kept the lead and got the win.
Who do you think of your teammates was most excited for you?
I don't know. I think they were all pretty excited. I mean, everyone's excited every time, like, someone hits a homer or, like, scores or gets a hit. You know, pretty much everyone's excited, especially when, you know, we take the lead off of that and, you know, put up runs on the board. So everyone gets excited for us.
Here's the 0-1. Pops this one up. Center field, going back on it is Marsh. He's on the warning track. Now he leaps, and it's over the wall. And it looked like it hit above the yellow line. Myers cruises into third, and I think that's a homer. It looked like it hit a couple of feet above the yellow line, and they're going to take a look, and now they're going to say home run. So Myers goes deep for the first time as a major leaguer, and it's 2-1.
0-1 the count to Myers. Pitched by Guerra, and Myers hits it in the air to right, fairly deep. It sends back Eaton at the wall, looking up. Grand slam! Jake Myers, 2 home runs. His first 2 in the big leagues coming tonight, including a granny. And the Astros lead it 8-2. How about the kid from Omaha?
Boy, what a shot the other way for Jake Myers. A mirror image of the 4th inning last night. Walk, walk, single, grand slam. And the Astros open this one up.
Coming into tonight, Jake Myers did not have a big league home run or a big league RBI. Now he has 2 big league home runs and 5 big league RBIs.
What kind of thrill was this whole night for you, just getting the first home run and then, you know, the big grand slam to blow it open?
It's an incredible moment. A lot of fun. Yeah, I just had a lot of fun playing with the guys today, and it was a great game. I'm glad we won.
Can you take us through the grand slam and kind of what you felt in the aftermath?
Yeah. I was kind of just looking for a fastball or anything up in the zone to just really get a run in. No outs, bases loaded, guys in scoring position. Try to do a job and help the team out, and I hit it really well, and it ended up going out, and so it was a lot of fun.
Had you ever hit a grand slam at any other point in your career, minors, high school?
I believe maybe just 1, but not very many. So this is a pretty special moment, especially to do it at this level.
Jake, did you feel a little cheated at first in the first one because you didn't know it was homer right away? You didn't get to take the tour. You stopped at third, and you kind of got even with the slam.
I was just excited to hear. I got to third base, and Omar was telling me that's a homer. That's a home run. And because I kind of just put my head down and started to run, that's when I saw it bounce off the wall. And so I was happy when I heard that, and happy I got a touch home. And then the grand slam on top of it was just really cool.
You have 2 huge mementos in those baseballs. Have you given some thought to what you're going to do with them?
I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure yet.
What was it like when you got in the dugout after both of them?
A lot of happy faces, support. It was really cool to see everybody, you know, that happy for me and for the team, because kind of got everything going a little bit. Everybody in the lineup just swung really well today.
What's been the first couple of weeks in the big leagues like, considering you've only started once prior to today? You're coming in the ninth inning a lot of times against, you know, some hard throwers. I mean, it's been a pretty tough assignment. Is that, you know, has that made it a little more difficult and, you know, just to kind of get your mind around what you're supposed to do every day?
Yeah. When I got the call up, I kind of saw where I was, my role on the team, and I really just wanted to help out in any way, any opportunity I got, just, you know, help the team win, because that's what it's about up here. So just kind of embracing that, it's been fun for me to learn from some of the guys, and they've been awesome, very supportive in helping me learn things up here.
Jake, how comfortable are you starting to feel at the plate? You had two home runs tonight, but it looked like you could have had four.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it well. And I felt like I was on time most of the time tonight, which is awesome. But yeah, it's credit to, you know, really the coaches and the other players to help set me up for something like this.
Yeah, I just want to ask, do you typically have a lot of power to the, you know, the opposite field? Or is that, you know, you like to drive the ball that way? Is that, you know, when you're going right, is that the place where you can hit the ball out of the park generally?
Yeah. I've always liked hitting the ball to right center the other way. But I like using the whole field, wherever it's pitched, you know, use the whole field.
The 1-2, swing and a miss. Ohtani goes down on the hook. Fourth strikeout for Luis Garcia. One away. Fletcher at third. Walsh at first. Now the 3-2. Swing and a foul tip into the glove of Castro for strike three. Stassi goes down on strikes for the second time tonight. And there are two outs in the inning. Here's the 1-0. That's a ground ball softly hit right side past Garcia. Tough play for Altuve. Fields throws. Got him! Angels will probably take a look at that. Joe Maddon has his right hand up. A slowly hit, bouncing ball by Iglesias, and Altuve had to get rid of it quickly with that sidearm toss. Is there enough to overturn that? And if it is overturned, that would mean a run for the Angels, and that the inning would continue, and the call stays the same.
Luis, how were you able to settle down after that first inning?
I was trying to battle all outing, and I was trying to do my thing like all night, and it went okay, so I'm happy about that.
Luis, can you talk about the offensive production you got from your teammates tonight?
Yeah, it was really good. Myers did an awesome job today, and I'm pretty happy for him. So, and I'm glad because he deserved it. I'm very happy for him.
Yeah. Luis, Dusty said that around the 80 pitch mark, you start to.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.